welcome to our brand new podcast called Enlightened Empaths. We are two intuitive mediums. We are Denise and Samantha, and we are very excited that you are joining us for our very first episode. Denise and I decided to start this podcast because we got such a wonderful response on my other podcast I do with my dear friend Deb called Psychic Teachers. Denise and I did a whole episode talking about what it is like to be an intuitive empath, and we got such a wonderful response from listeners through emails and text and on Facebook and Instagram that we decided there was a real need in the online community and the podcast community to talk about what it is to be an intuitive empath. And so we've decided to bring this podcast to you. We are planning on talking about all sorts of wonderful things in connection with being an empath, such as how to be an empathic parent, how to be an empathic worker at your place of work, how to be an empathic friend, how to survive in the world when you feel everything. So I'll take a breath and just let Denise jump in here. Denise, do you want to just say hello and help me define what an empath is for others?
I do. And I think right now the timing for this is absolutely incredible because people are waking up. We're at such a polarity right now energetically that highly sensitive people are finally stepping into their own and realizing that they're not alone in this. And a part of that being so porous and sucking up everybody else's emotions is needing to learn the skills on how to navigate in a carbon-based world, but also to honor your light and the light within others. And I think that that's a huge piece of what we'd like to do is there are so many skills that you can learn and so many practices that you can do that can help you to feel more confident and realize that you're not making things up in your head. You are that sensitive. And instead of seeing it as a detriment, it's actually a beautiful blessing.
Yes. And just that word sensitive, it's used as a criticism usually. Haven't you noticed that? You're so sensitive. You're being too sensitive. And I think It's important to take the power of that word back, because being asensitive is, like you said, it's a blessing. It's not a curse. It's not a criticism. And if you think about it, how silly is it that people are putting us down for feeling too much?
Exactly. And for everyone who wants to develop intuition, they want to develop mediumship, they want to learn how to harness those empathic skills and sensitivity, that's a huge part of this. And I can almost guarantee a lot of folks that would be listening to this have been told, you're too sensitive, you feel things too much, you need to toughen up. When in actuality, if you want to be a medium or an intuitive or work in a spiritual realm, that's your ace in the hole, is that sensitivity.
I couldn't agree more. Gordon Smith, that wonderful medium across the pond, as they say, he always says whenever people ask him, you know, what is the number one tool you need to be a medium? He always says compassion.
And I agree 1,000%.
I do too.
And I think that's also what we need as individuals and as a collective right now.
Well, let's tell people what an empath is for anyone who's just stumbled across this podcast and is like, what are these two ladies talking about? Let's just give an overview about what it means to be an empath, what the definition, how do you define empath? Like for you, I don't mean like for the Webster's Dictionary. Like what, what does it mean to you?
For me personally, it's feeling things. When I interact with people, I feel what they're feeling. When I'm around grief or stress or anxiety, I feel that as if I'm experiencing it. Also with joy or levity, it's that being so connected to the energetic frequencies that you feel it as your own. That would be my own definition.
And you know what? I think you said it better than the Webster Dictionary, because according to the dictionary, the definition is the action of understanding, being aware of, being sensitive to, and vicariously experiencing the feelings, thoughts, and experiences of another without having the feelings, thoughts, and experiences fully communicated in an objectively explicit manner. Doesn't that make you go, say what?
It does, and it also doesn't validate how deeply empaths experience other people's feelings or situations, or it's an intensity that can't be captured with that definition.
Yes, exactly. And I think part of the key with being an empath is recognizing that you are one. So for example, when you go into work and everyone is really stressed out, like let's say, for example, your boss comes into work one day and says, hey, everybody, we've been bought out by such and such company. And so in the next couple of months, you know, we're just going to be making some changes. Well, you know what to read between the lines of that means, right? Some people are going to be going. And so that work environment suddenly goes from being, you know, jovial to very, very stressful. Now, the average person can put their head down and just focus on work and get through that stressful time. But an empath is going to walk into that office and he or she is going to feel subconsciously, not consciously. It happens very, very subtly. It happens in the body. It happens in the aura. It happens in the emotional, energetic bodies of your energy. And you're going to feel the stress, the worry, the anxiety, the competition, all of that negativity. You're going to feel that more strongly than anybody else in that office. And if you don't know that you're an empath, you're going to just assume that all of those feelings are yours. And then you're going to go home and you're going to call up your friends and you're going to think, I think I have anxiety, or I'm having a panic attack, or maybe I'm depressed. And, you know, maybe that is true for some people. But for the empath, it's just that you are feeling the heightened emotions of everyone around you. So that's why I think recognizing it is really the first important step.
And also with that, when you were talking about that, I was thinking about people are going to go home and they're going to say, I think I'm going to lose my job. How am I going to pay my bills? And the physical reaction of that, and how important it is to protect yourself when you do go into a work environment or a public place, because we suck it all up like a sponge.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And one of the hardest things I think about being an empath is that people lie all the time. Right. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean like everyone's a liar, but what I mean is the image that we project at work, to our friends, on social media, is an image that we try to make fairly perfect. Right. Mm-hmm. And yet underneath, there's stuff going on. I mean, life is life. No, nobody's perfect. An empath always sees behind and beneath the illusion that the person is projecting.
Oh, I love that.
Thank you.
But, you're welcome.
But the what's hard is that the person will always deny the truth that you are feeling. And so The empath ends up doubting him or herself.
And that goes into that double guessing place of this, I think I'm making this stuff up in my head. It can't be as much as I think it is. Exactly.
I remember taking psychology classes in college, and we read these studies, and I can't quote them perfectly because I don't remember where exactly they were done, but they did these studies where they had one truth. Like, I'm just going to make it up. Like, there is an elephant in the room. Mm-hmm. And one person would, like, let's say there were 10 people in the room. 9 people were told to tell the one volunteer, there's not an elephant in the room.
Right.
By the end of the hour, that volunteer wasn't seeing the elephant. Now, I'm making that example up. Like,
right.
I can't, you know, it was, but that's just, you get the idea of what the objective is of the study. And so what they determined is that if you can get a majority of people to believe in a falsehood as truth, eventually everybody will own it as truth. And I think that's what happens with empaths who start to shut down their empathic, sensitive, intuitive ability, because they go throughout life as children and they are seeing behind and beneath the illusion of what everyone is projecting. And yet everybody is telling them, no, you're wrong. No, mommy and daddy aren't fighting. Go back to bed. No, daddy isn't drinking. Go back to bed. No, mom's not going to lose her job. We have plenty of money. Don't worry about it. You know, we're constantly lied to as kids.
And that goes over to the next step of, for a lot of empathics who do have mediums, you know, their mediums as well, no, there's no one there. Go back to bed. You're not seeing that person in your room, or you're not sensing your grandmother who passed. And that mixed message, and then getting into, say, for a little person, getting into a public school arena where that could be ridiculed or denied as well, can be pretty devastating. And I think for a lot of, but the cool part of that is, right now, there are so many people waking up and embracing this that we're evolving in a new direction. And it's truly, the empaths are coming together. There's so much books, there's literature, people are finding this in themselves. I think it's absolutely fantastic.
I do too. I mean, George Anderson, a wonderful medium up in New York, his parents checked him into a mental institution when he was seeing spirits. Right. I don't think today that would happen. I hope not. But I do think you're right that people are waking up and starting to realize that this is an actual ability. You know, there are, if the word sensitive that we mentioned in the beginning of the show is a trigger point for me, I don't like it when people use that word negatively. Another word I would love to change the definition or, you know, collective meaning of is imagination. How many times as a kid were we told, "Oh, Samantha, you didn't see a ghost in the closet. That's just your imagination." Or, "Oh, Samantha, you have such a good imagination. You should write that down. Ha, ha, ha."
And interesting, though, that the a lot of intuitive studies and a lot of people who teach intuition development will say, you're using your imagination. It's that same place. If you're clairvoyant, you're going to see a picture in your mind similar to when you imagine it. So it is tapping into those same resources in your brain chemistry. So, and that's what I love about this. I don't think that any of us are more or less. I think we all have this capability. It's just if we access it.
That was the biggest, I don't know, aha moment, if I was going to quote Oprah, or it was just, that was the realization that all or 90% of mediumship happens in your quote unquote imagination. Right. That was the biggest step that got me to realize, oh my gosh, I think I am a medium, because I really believed what I saw on TV and in the movies. And I believed that mediums were just walking around seeing people all the time that were deceased. Yes. Didn't you think that?
Mm-hmm. Right. And also when people say you're making that up, or they ridicule, because that's that fine line. Generally, if you're empathic and sensitive and to that place where you are picking up on spirit or people who have passed, sensitive is pretty much who you are to the core. And then ridicule and being demeaned or made fun of don't usually go very well with that.
No.
So we put the walls up.
Exactly. I remember I used to watch all those paranormal shows on TV, you know, like the Rescue Mediums and Paranormal State, things like that. Mm-hmm. And I would watch those shows and I would watch how the medium would help cross these spirits over, and it always happened in his or her mind. And I thought, they're just making that up. Like, what the heck is going on? You know, like, what is this? But then if you watch like that show, especially Rescue Mediums, really does a good job of showing that the spirit has crossed over, because after they leave, all of the evidence of the ghost being there is gone. And I remember just thinking, wow, like so much that is going on around us as an empath or an intuitive or a medium or all three is really happening in this nonverbal way.
Yes.
Once you tune into that and recognize it and own it, really a whole new matrix opens up for you.
And it all validates that the scientific piece of it's all energy and it's all frequency and it's where things are vibrating.
Yes. I remember I was taking an intuitive development class. I'd only gone maybe three times. I hadn't spoken once. You know, I was just nervous. I didn't know anybody. And the teacher, you know, had somebody sit in the middle and we all had to tune in and just get messages for her. That was the only guidance we had. I mean, she taught us, you know, open your chakras and protect your energy and then try to get a message. And I remember staring at this woman and closing my eyes and just picturing a blank screen. And I saw this older woman, you know, not very old, but just older. And she was in a house coat in like that typical 1970s kitchen with like, you know, the avocado green.
Yeah.
and the linoleum floors, and she was smoking a cigarette. And she pointed to the woman in the middle, but this is in my head. But she pointed to her and she said, "That one always wanted me to be perfect."
Wow.
And I just shared what I saw, and the woman said, "That's my mom," like to a T. She always wore that house code, and that's my kitchen, and she was a smoker, and we had a very difficult relationship. And I remember driving home from that class going, like, what happened? Mm-hmm. You know, here I am in this little room in this class. It still blows my mind. Don't you, like, when you do readings and you connect with a human being who is no longer alive on the earth, and you get validations that you are actually talking to that soul, doesn't that still amaze you?
Every time. It's to me, there's such a sacredness in that, especially when it helps someone heal from heartache or if it and just the things that they'll show us that we have no way of knowing, but it registers for that person. I'm in awe every time it happens.
And, you know, and I don't know how it happens. I don't understand it. But once I recognized that this was happening in my mind's eye.
Yes.
And that, you know, those things that I was, that's the most empowering thing too about owning your intuition is you start to become empowered in your everyday life. Because as I started realizing that I was intuitive and that the things I was picking up on and sensing about people were actually true and not just me projecting anything onto them, well, then I started to realize maybe those little things I think about myself might be true too. Like that little voice that says, "You're doing a good job. You're okay. You're going to get through this." I thought maybe that's true too. And so it started to empower me in other ways.
It helps your sense of self and builds your confidence, which I think is exactly what you're saying. But you can also apply it to those gut feelings when something doesn't add up. If someone is standing right in front of you and your stomach is churning, you're saying, "This doesn't feel right to me." And everything coming out of that person's mouth, the look on their face, it's like, why am I getting this gut feeling? So when we are able to tap more into whether it's the mediumship or anything that validates that, yes, you're not making this up. Yes, this is really happening. And I think that that's a really good point about the more empathic or the more you embrace your empathic self, because I do think it's a part of everyone, how much your physical body becomes a barometer, whether it's a twinge or a physical reaction, which also helps build your confidence and your sense of self in that you have that connection between the mind body and what we manifest physically. I truly believe it all starts in our brains or in our energetic field.
That's so important and such a good suggestion. Oftentimes, empaths attract negative people more so than the average person. And Denise and I are going to do a lot of shows on recognizing and dealing with that in your relationships. But because we empaths are so compassionate and we want to help others, you know, like that Coldplay song where he says, "I will fix you."
Right.
That's kind of the goal of the average empath. You know, we want to go around and fix everybody and help everybody, which is completely, you know, impossible. Only we can fix ourselves.
It's also a reason why so many empaths end up in codependent relationships, because we're really good at it.
Exactly. And that's why we tend to attract negative people into our lives who will take advantage of that kindness and generosity of spirit, which is why it's important to pay attention to those twinges that Denise was saying in your body, because oftentimes we empaths are so used to overlooking people's negativity because we can always see behind that negativity to the scared, fearful person they are inside. And so we tend to dismiss a lot. But if you pay attention to your body, it's always talking to you. So for example, if you're, you know, out with friends and you're laughing and you're having a good time and one of your negative energy vampire coworkers texts you, pay attention to your stomach dropping or your heart rate increasing or your eyes like involuntarily rolling in the back of your head, like, "Ugh, I don't want to deal with this person."
And don't you find the more and more you come, become in tune with that and pay attention, how interconnected it all is, the physical, the mental, the emotional, we're vibrating it all at once rather than in little bits. It's not just the clairvoyance or it's not just the physical reaction. It becomes this whole package deal.
Yes, exactly. It's all connected. I think everything we always talk about when you and I are just, you know, talking as friends is that it's all connected.
The other piece, though, for and I think that the timing of doing this is to help people honor that light within themselves and realize that everything that is going on is happening to them. But also I've talked to quite a few people recently during readings that they're experiencing, it's almost like right out of the chute, they are coming in fully, like someone is flipping the light switch, and folks who were somewhat sensitive or somewhat aware all of a sudden are just getting blasted with energy. And it's a lot. I mean, we've had time to work into this.
It is a lot. And I don't know exactly why it's happening now. You know, like I can't tell you, well, it's 2012 and the Mayans, or it's, you know, like I can't tell you exactly why everybody does seem to be waking up right now. You know, are we moving into the age of Aquarius? You know, I don't know what the reason is, but I think everyone listening can agree that there are some very significant shifts happening collectively throughout the world, and we are waking up. And I think the anger that you see out there, like, I don't know about you, Denise, but I am trying really hard to stay on top of the news. But mm-hmm. the anger that you see in people with world events and politics and all of that is just overwhelming. And so I think people who are resisting this waking up are the ones who are angry. And I think the ones that are surrendering to this waking up are the ones that are listening to this show and are excited and you know, curious and wondering what's going on.
And what you said a few minutes ago, they're feeling more empowered about what's coming. It's not all a fear-based doom and gloom. It's more like, wow, I'm waking up. I have some control over my destiny. This feels good. And interesting that I'm just fascinated lately with how we're all tapping into that same collective energy, that there are people on the West Coast that are going through similar emotional reactions as people on the East Coast or in British Columbia. And so obviously we're all getting blasted with this same big wave of energy, but how we're choosing to process that and the direction we're going to take with it seems to be the real key. And I agree with you 100% on if you've allowed yourself to get pulled into, and to me that's also an energy vampire, pulled into that dark way of looking at what's going on rather than stepping away from it and saying, how can I help change this? How can I help things go in a more positive direction? And not in a Pollyanna way, but more in a, I know that my sensitivity is a piece. I know my empathic is a piece. How can I connect with other people so that we can move forward as a collective and help each other through these times?
Yes, exactly. Well said. And if you are an empath, you're going to have a hard time watching and listening to the news. And I do think it's important to give yourself really good breaks from all of that. You know, everything that's going on in the world right now, you and I are not going to change by watching it or reading it.
No.
And being selective. So I think it's okay to step back and take those breaks when needed.
I think that that's, spit it out.
Uh-oh, Tanisha, I'm losing you. Can you hear me?
As well as protecting yourself, but also I'm here to be of service and help. I do want to be there, but I can't. It's too much. It's being bombarded energetically.
Yes, exactly. So I think taking breaks from the news is going to be important. I think it's important, too, to take breaks from the negative people in your life, even if they are incredibly close to you. You know, if you have a brother who's always depressed or down or angry, I think it's okay to not answer that phone call every time. If you have a boss who's just always beating on your head and, you know, doom and gloom, negative stuff, I think it's okay to correspond through email and not always jump to the office. You know, so even if you have to encounter a negative person on your daily life, I think it's okay to find ways around that and to learn to set boundaries with that.
And that's exactly what I was just going to say, is I think for a lot of empaths and for a lot of people in general right now, that's the key, is reestablishing and redefining boundaries for ourselves and also for the people we interact with in various parts of our lives.
Yes, yes. And I think too, like avoiding crowds when possible. Mm-hmm. Is really important for empaths. And I mean that in lots of different ways. For example, you know, I live in a touristy area. And so I don't go to those touristy areas of my town on Saturdays and Sundays because I don't like crowds. I specifically go to the grocery store at 7 a.m. because I don't like crowds. Right. I do. I mean, I will plan my day around avoiding crowds. I take my kids to Walt Disney World every 2 years, always in November or January.
No lines for the rides.
No lines. Although the last time I went in November, it was packed. So I think people
really?
Are. Really? Yes, it was ridiculous.
Oh, they're on to you, Samantha.
Oh. I know. What are some like strategies you do to appease your empathy?
As far as the crowd piece, especially if and this may be if you work in a large public building, if you work in a school, a hospital, a government building, a big office building, for me, a really helpful tool, and I think I mentioned this the last on your other podcast, is that I have to protect myself. I do a little prayer and a meditation. I ask for protection. I always ask to honor my light as well as the light in whoever I come in contact with, and I kind of put a little soft buffer around myself so that I don't leave feeling completely depleted and worn down. And I think those little skills, those little things that we learn over time, are some things I would love to share with people so that you can enjoy life more because you're not always feeling bombarded. I think ritual and routine is another thing, and not in a claustrophobic way or a limiting way, but in, you know, when you set similar, I do the same prayer and meditation before I go in because that's giving my signal to spirit that's saying, okay, I'm ready to do this and thank you for your help.
So. I think that ritual and routine is really important for everybody. And like you said, not in a rigid, you know, I have to do this, but right. Just to have, you know, something that you can go throughout your day intentionally with. For example, I try, and I fail all the time at this, but I try to wake up in the morning and do my, you know, the 5 pages from The Artist Way, where you just kind of do like a mind dump. It ends up being more of like a dream journal than a proper Artist Way journal, but that's okay.
But it's still that writing, and I do the same thing. I do my pages every morning, and I have for years, and sometimes I bitch. Oops, sorry, I'm not supposed to say that. Sometimes I complain, and you all know what I was going to say, though.
We can give this podcast an E rating just to accommodate our foul mouths, Denise. That can happen.
Okay.
Denise and I both share a love of colorful language.
Yes. Okay, now that I'm trying to get that back in a new direction. Sometimes it's just to dump and vent and get things out of the way. Other times it's to process. But it's always a beautiful way to, that for me is another way to connect and to honor my sensitivity, if we're going to use that as the blanket statement for this. But I think it's so, so important whether you write or you play music or you garden, or there has to be something that shuts your brain off and connects you to divine so you can get it out of the way.
You know what it is for me on busy days? Making a cup of tea.
And again, there can be a real ritual to that.
Yeah, yeah. I'll tell you, with empaths, I feel in my personal experience that when we aren't on our path or when we are not listening to what our emotions are trying to tell us, we tend to get really, really busy. And that's when we walk away from that ritual and that routine. And so pay attention to when you are distracting yourself with, you know, the busyness of life, you know, because I think that that's a way to avoid what your sensitive nature is trying to tell you about whatever negative situation is in your life that as empaths, we're really, really good at avoiding. Another thing that empaths are really good about is taking blame.
Oh, owning everybody's stuff.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Or again, going back to overthinking things of, I wonder if I could have done more, or should I have said this, or, and which sounds like an insecurity thing, but it's more so of wanting people, because we feel it, we want people to feel good.
Yes. Yep. And I think it's, I don't know if this is true for all empaths, but I'll tell you, for me, there's a sense of control in my empathy that I'm working on releasing. So what I mean by that is, if I'm dealing with a negative person and I'm trying to help that person or just get through the day with that person, I think that my ability to take the blame for that, whatever that situation is the only way I know to control it.
Ooh, that's a very good point.
Do you know what I mean? Because I can't change that other person, but I can change the way I react or respond to that person. And so very often what I'll do is I'll say, well, maybe I should have reached out more. Maybe I could have called more. Maybe. But then I've been doing a lot of work with my shadow side and really trying to own some crap, as they say. And I really think part of me, it's not like, oh, look at Samantha. She's so altruistic. She's always focused on others. No, I think that's me trying to control it, because if I can't control that person from being mean and rude and horrible, I that freaks me out, not having control. Then I feel scared.
But I think that that's a really, really important piece to this as well, is we all have a shadow side. And if we're in denial of that, or we're not working to, because that's, for some empaths, one of the reasons they're so sensitive is because they grew up in or were exposed to toxic situations or difficult situations, and it becomes kind of a defense thing. And I think sometimes that gets stuck in that shadow part of us, and we need to deal with it so that we can continue to evolve and move forward and not hold on to things, like hold it in our cell level.
Yes. That's the crucial area where we need to do so much releasing and surrendering. You know, when I was starting to accept that I was an intuitive medium, I was passionate about reading biographies of other psychics. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I noticed was that most of them, if not all, had a dysfunctional childhood. Right. And many of them had an alcoholic in the family.
Right.
And so I started to think, okay, wait, like when you have a really volatile parent in the home, you know, they call it walking on eggshells.
Right.
And when that happens, I feel that you kind of automatically turn on your sixth sense, because you have to be so open to the nuances. Are they in a good mood today? Are they in a bad mood today? And you could, I had a client once who said to me, I could tell by the way my father stepped on the first stair of the landing on the staircase when he got up in the morning, if it was going to be a good day or a bad day. And I remember thinking, wow, like that's tuned in.
That's incredibly tuned in. And it's also at times for some people, it became a survival, like a fight or flight response, that intrinsic and that. And I do. That's why I go back to, I think we all have this part of us, because it is that primal survival level of tapping into our emotional place.
Right. And, you know, so many people, you always hear, like, I'm so tired of people like reusing the same line again and again. But, you know, you always hear everybody has psychic ability just the way everybody can play a piano, but we're not all Mozart. Right. We've all heard that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I wonder if it's that everybody has intuitive abilities, and it's not that people like me and you, Denise, have brought these abilities from past lives of being an intuitive, but I wonder if it's more that tipping point, you know, that study that showed if you spend 10,000 hours at anything, you'll become talented at it. Mm-hmm. I wonder if in our childhoods, we spent 10,000 hours being so tuned in and turned on to our parents' moods and emotions, that's why we developed this.
I think that's an excellent, excellent point. I really do, because there are very few intuitives, medium sensitives that I've ever talked to that don't have at least one little colorful segment in their past.
That's a nice way to put it.
I thought so. I had to reach for that one.
Well, and I think when you are open to your empathy and you're open to your intuition and your connection to all that is, and you surrender to it, then I think spirit guides you to where you need to be. And then that puts you in a position of living life in flow. And I am not on this podcast to say, look at me, I live my life in flow, because I don't.
No, but we're carbon-based.
Yes, but I try, and I'm aware when I am, and I'm aware when I'm not. And I think that's really important, and just all we can do at the moment is just try to live in flow. And so I wanted to talk about how you and I met, because I feel like when you and I met, that's when my life was in flow.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll tell my little part of the story, and then you can tell your little part of the story.
Okay.
So I am a huge, huge, huge fan of John Holland, the intuitive medium. I first saw him on Unsolved Mysteries in like the 1980s, and I was like, gosh, this guy is the real deal. Again, it was my empathy, but I didn't know. But I just intuitively felt that he was a very genuine person. And so I've read all his books, and I just really, really like him. And a couple of years ago, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to take a class with him. I've never done that. I've never, you know, left my family for a weekend and gone to just take a class for myself. That was way too selfish for the old me. But this one time I was like, you know what? I'm going to just listen to this and do this. So I went to his website, and there happened to be a class called Platform Mediumship in New Jersey. And I thought, I can make that work. And so I signed up for it. I thought Platform Mediumship meant take your mediumship to the next platform. So that's, I went into this class thinking that, and it was John Holland and Janet Nahoevac. And I'm still super proud of myself because, you know, I took 3 days away from my family. I flew by myself. I rented a car by myself. I got a hotel room by myself. These are big things for me, people. Like, I'm not, you know, I'm very much like always with, I like to show up to places with somebody else. I'm still like a middle school girl in that way. So I went to this spiritualist church by myself, and everybody seemed to be grouped together. And I saw Denise sitting in one of the pews by herself, and I said, you know, can I sit here? And she said, yes, absolutely. And I think we made a little bit of small talk. And then John Hunt, Janet introduced themselves and explained that platform mediumship is when you stand on stage and do readings for people in the audience. And I thought I was going to have a full-blown panic attack because he said, the whole point of this weekend is to get each and every one of you up on this stage giving all of us readings. And I think, didn't I raise my hand, Denise, and say, like, I didn't know
you
that.
Did.
Okay. I thought I did.
Yes.
I raised my hand and I was like, I didn't know that's what this weekend was about. And he wasn't, like, mean to me, but I have blonde hair. And I'll tell you, I definitely think he categorized me as...
as having a moment.
Yeah. Because he was just like, everybody, wasn't it on the website? Like, wasn't it clearly stated platform mediumship? And he said, I think you just needed to be here. And, you know, maybe your guides just got you here. And this is what you need to do. And because of that, I'm going to make you go first. And I was like, no, I cannot do that. And he was like, how about third? And I was like, okay. And I just, it was just terrible. It was, I am.
But you did a beautiful job.
I did, but only because of you. Because what you did was, I mean, I was just, I couldn't, I see, I'm getting nervous thinking about it. And it was a long time ago.
Me too.
I remember he called me to go up there, and you turned to me and you put a rose quartz and an amethyst in my palms, and you squeezed my hand and you said, hold these and you'll be okay. And I knew I had found a sister friend in that moment.
And they helped, didn't they?
They totally did. I got one connection and the lady, you know, validated what I said, and I spoke for like, I don't know, 7 minutes, and I sat back down and it was done.
But you really did. But the beauty of it was, once you got going, you stepped out of the way and you let spirit come through and you kicked it. You really did a beautiful job with it. And the other piece is to, for anyone who is, I mean, we're both mediums. This is what we do. We've done lots and lots of readings. But when you're in a room full of mediums, it's a completely different game. I don't care what anybody tells you. It's a different energy. It's a different feeling. Do you agree with that?
I do.
It's very different.
To me, it's an incredibly supportive atmosphere on the one hand, and it's an incredibly competitive atmosphere on the other hand at the same time.
Bingo. And also the people, so this again goes back to the empath part. If you put all of these sensitive people who are sensing spirit in a room, most of them are going to be empaths. So we're all picking up on each other's energy as well as tapping into the collective. It's intense. And also not wanting to, and the competitive piece is interesting because I think some people choose to go to those kind of workshops to try to let other people know how good they are at what they do, whereas other folks go to try to build their skill set. Or I think that there's that balance between it's sure an interesting mix of folks. We'll leave it at that.
We met some of the nicest people there, and
incredible.
We met some of the strangest people there.
I agree.
A really great mix, and it was so fun just to be amongst like-minded people. So Denise is not jumping in right away to share her experience, and I'm going to ask you to. But first, I just want to say that I think you blew everyone out of the water with your reading that weekend, because we all stood up on this little stage and, you know, we would what you would do is you'd have to say who you were getting in spirit and give like a lot of facts about that person. Janet and John really pushed us, like, how did they die? And, you know, what's the sign that they give and what's their name? And like, you know, you push for facts and then you say, can anybody validate this? Can anybody take this? I think is what they said to say. Right. And then, you know, someone would raise their hand and say, well, yeah, I had an uncle who, you know, passed from a heart attack in the 60s, and that also makes sense. And he was a police officer. And then you go from there. So Denise stands up and she's, you know, boom, 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 all these facts. And she's standing up there like naked and vulnerable on this stage, metaphorically.
Thank goodness.
And she's saying, can anyone take this? And nobody raises their hand, which, I mean, I would just crawl on my hands and knees and just say, I'm going on a plane and flying home. Goodbye, everyone. But you didn't. Like, you brought in more facts and said, can anybody take this now? And there was this huge long pause again. And I'm looking around going, help a sister out. Like, somebody just raise their hand. And finally, John Flippin Holland raised his hand and he was like, this is for me. You've got my aunt. And I was like, damn, she's reading for John Holland. It was so cool. And you could tell, like, he was uncomfortable. Couldn't you? Like, I don't think he wanted to be read, but you hit it so hard, he had to admit it.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
She still won't admit it.
I can't. But the reason I ended up there was I had worked with John Holland before. He had always said, I had gone to a thing and sat in the back of the room and not said anything and, you know, sat there like my good school teacher self and took lots of notes. And he had said at the end, he said, if you ever have the opportunity to work with Janet, she has a spiritualist church, she's amazing, just the experience of working with her. So that's how I ended up at the New Jersey thing. And it was a completely different, I mean, I love the building. It's a beautiful, talk about a nice essence and supportive environment. It was incredible. But they're very, very direct, very succinct. This is about, you know, being a professional, taking your skills to the next level. There was no wiggle room. You were either up there or you could not say no and say, no, I'm not going to do this.
No, it was like Simon and, you know, Paula Abdul. Really? really, because they took notes and they critiqued you hard.
Yes, and it was.
And I don't mean you. I mean you understood. No, like,
everybody. Oh yeah, yes, everybody. They literally had notepads that they'd write it down. Ooh, gives me the willies even now. That was big, but the beauty of that was Spirit set us both in that same place. We made that connection, and again, like-minded people, we're finding each other. And for me, that was a real turning point in finding more like-minded people and stepping out of my comfort zone a little bit and, you know, peeking out of the psychic closet a little bit more and saying, okay, I guess it's safe to go out. And I think for a lot of folks right now, that same thing is happening, as they want to talk to other people who get how they feel and how they're experiencing life.
Exactly, because having that connection and just being able to talk to somebody who gets it, that's therapy and healing and wonderful all in of itself. You know, is just having somebody say, I totally get it. I know what it's like, you know, to have that. And I mean, and sometimes you and I will just call each other up and be like, oh my gosh, I had this client today who just, you know, wasn't hearing the message I was trying to deliver. And it's just so nice to be able to kvetch with somebody as well. And I think that's important. And, you know, really the way I met Denise was just taking a year of my life to focus on me and to focus on, you know, setting good boundaries and inviting in only the positive. And I really said, I mean, one of my goals that year was to meet a like-minded friend. Ideally, I wish I had added locally, so we weren't so far away from each other. But, you know, you and I walked away from that workshop kind of with mixed feelings because, you know, it was a lot of money and a lot of time, and we basically got 10 minutes of instruction per person.
Right.
And so we kind of walked away going, oh, I don't know if that was, if I would do that again, but it was really good, and I don't know. And I think I've walked away from it going, I was meant to be there not so I can learn platform mediumship, because I don't think there will ever be a day I'll be on stage doing that. It's just not who I am. But I think I was led to be there to meet you.
Right. And I never knew that connection, that that was your year, because that was the year I took a leave of absence from my job to decide, am I ready to do this work full time? And I had said to Spirit, if this is what you want me to be really doing, please present the circumstances and the people that I'll know I'm on the right path. And going to that workshop was part of that. So that's interesting that we were both kind of in the same place.
Wow.
with how we ended up there. I never realized that.
Yeah, for you. I didn't make that connection either. That's really cool.
Very cool. Yeah.
And I think that's true. You know, if you're listening to this and you're going, well, I'm an empath and I don't know any other empaths. I didn't either for years. And I really started putting it out there that I needed like-minded friends. And I started finding them. Now, I didn't find them, you know, sitting in my house listening to podcasts, which I also do all the time. I found them by, you know, going out and joining new classes and taking, you know, taking those steps, which is hard for me. I'm shy.
Me too.
You know, I was volunteering. This was back in April at a book fair, and I met this really, really nice woman, and we just had so much in common. And I said, would you like to get a cup of coffee sometime? And she was like, sure. And we exchanged text and we met for coffee. Like, that's something the old me would not have done.
Right.
Would have wanted to do, but would have been too shy to actually say that. And so I think when you start to set the intention to meet like-minded people, you've got to take actions to get out there. And then once you do meet them, oftentimes you have to take action again to set something up. But, you know, I think it's important to do that because we empaths need connection. And I don't know about you, Denise, but for me as an empath, when I get overwhelmed with life, I tend to turtle. I call it turtling myself.
Oh, like I sequester. Yeah. Go in the cave. Yeah.
Go in the cave, cut off, disconnect. And I don't even realize, like, I have one feisty friend who was like, dude, you've got to stop doing that. Like, because I take it personally when you don't call me back for 3 days or text me back. And like, I get it. You're going through a difficult time at this moment, but you got to tell me. And I was like, oh, I guess I do. You know, like, I kind of thought maybe that is selfish, but I think when you're an empath, that's what that's what you do to recharge your batteries, is you just kind of tuck in and disconnect. And I don't think that's a good thing always. I think I have to do that at least one day a month. You know, I have to have like days of silence and whatnot. But I mean, consistently as a pattern, I don't think it's good to do that. And I think if you have like-minded friends, you're not going to need to do that as much.
And that's the beauty of being in the age that we're in now, is if you're in, I think I mentioned this to someone I was doing a reading with the other day. I used to live in a town in Oregon that had 63 people. There weren't any like-minded people out there. I was in the middle of nowhere. But if I could have gotten online and connected with people and chatted and talked and gone to I was so painfully shy for a big percentage of my life. If you can at least make that initial step to reach out to anyone who's going to understand, I think that stepping stone, there might need to be a stepping stone between a coffee and leaving the house. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it does. And it is small stepping stones, but you got to follow that guidance and do what you can to get the connection that you need. Because empaths can be introverts, and it's not, I don't think it's so much that we are introverts. It's just that that's how we recharge our batteries. We don't know how to ask for help. We don't know how to, invite other people to connect and work with us. We feel more empowered when we're helping others. But it's like, I love, love, love Robin Williams, and I'm so sad that he's not with us. But he has this wonderful quote where he says, "Who makes the clown laugh?"
Right.
And I always think about that with empaths, like, who helps the empath to feel and to heal? Because we're always focused on helping others to get clarity and focus and heal with their own lives. But oftentimes it's not that, we're a victim, no one's helping us, blah, blah, blah. It's that we're not letting anybody help us.
Bingo. And the other piece to that is, as a positive part of that, a lot of folks who may not be quite as empathic or sensitive don't understand how we can enjoy our own company so much.
Yes.
I like to be alone. There are certain things that I prefer to do alone, as far as, when you say you need a day off a month, I need a daily, even if it's 10 minutes, 15 minutes, just that. And I used, when my sons were younger, I would set the clock and get up really stupid early so that I'd have that alone time just to recharge and to center. And I think it's important.
I do too. I'm the opposite. I wish I could set my alarm. This is what I do. I tell my kids, I'm going to go to bed at 10 p.m. and I'm going to wake up early and make a really big breakfast. And then it's like 1:30 in the morning and I'm still reading. And I hate that. I can't switch that. But yeah, I think that is so important to honor that you do need alone time and to model that for others. Just the other day I said to my kids, I got to run to Target and pick up something I ordered that's there. And my youngest said, "I'll come with you, Mom." No, they were all tucked in on our couch with blankets and watching a movie. It was pouring rain. And I knew she did not want to drive 20 minutes across town and walk through flipping Target with me.
Right.
And I said, "Honey, no. Like, you don't need to come with me." And she was like, "Well, I don't want you to be alone."
Oh.
And I said, "Honey, you need to understand something about Mommy. I love to be alone more than any person you'll ever meet in this world." She was like, "Okay." And so I think it's important, to recognize that in yourself, if you are like that, and to model that for others, like to let people know.
And it ties in with the boundaries. If you're in a relationship with someone who isn't as comfortable with alone time, setting those boundaries to say, "I really need this time for myself," and not having it be, "Why don't you want to spend time with me?" Or have it be a negative thing. It's more of, "You're going to like me a lot better if you let me have some time to myself."
Yes. "You're going to like me a lot better." That's so true. That is such a good point. Yeah. And so I think really being an empath is just about owning yourself and accepting yourself. And really, isn't that the key to life in general?
Oh, it is. And I think truly with everything that's going on nationally, internationally, energetically, however we want to label that, it's go time as far as the self-acceptance piece and realizing that the way we're wired is a positive thing. It's a good thing. It's going to help us navigate what's coming next.
You know, I
and
do these little...
more.
Yes. I do these little meditations on my other podcast, and I try to like write them down, you know, so as I don't mess up and get someone out of the flow when they're meditating. And so I've been working on this new meditation to help people accept their shadow side. And I like to do guided meditations where you're visualizing something really specific. Mm-hmm. So I was working on this meditation where you are saying goodbye to this shadow side, and you're like kind of just walking like on a bridge and you're walking away. And I thought, that is so wrong. That's not what you do to your shadow side. You
right.
own your shadow side. You embrace your shadow side. You know, like it's this summer, we have a neighborhood pool, and I'm, you know, like I said, my kids aren't perfect. I'm not perfect. But one thing I love about my kids is they've never been like, you know, those kids, look at me, mom, look at me. I'm going to jump I'm going to dive now. Look at me. Well, there are those kids in my neighborhood
yes.
who do that. And what I've noticed is that their moms are always talking to other moms or on their phone or reading a magazine. And I realized the reason why my kids aren't going, look at me, look at me, look at me, is because usually I am looking at them. Like usually I
yes.
am, you know, engaging Waving. With them.
And, hi.
Yeah. And anyway, I thought that's what our shadow side, like our shadow side acts out when we're ignoring it or distancing ourselves from that part of ourselves or pretending that that part of ourselves doesn't exist. That's when life conspires to make you recognize, no, no, lady, there is still lots of crap you need to work
There's
on about yourself.
There's always more work. Always.
There's always more work. But when we own that shadow side and we embrace her and hug her and give her the attention she is so desperately seeking, then we can have that connection and union within ourselves, of ourselves. And so now I'm working on changing that meditation to, you know, hug that shadow side.
Right. And the healing. It feels the same to me as when you do inner child work, as far as you're embracing that part of yourself that needs to be loved and nurtured and cared for and encouraged, not distanced or put on hold. So I think that's fabulous and so important for people who are empathic or anyone in general, but I don't want to make it a delineation that, you know, there's a difference between, you know what I'm saying.
Yes, I do. I do.
That was kind of a rant.
No, but it was a good rant. So if you've enjoyed listening to us rant to each other and go on about being an empath and awakening to your intuition, I hope that you guys keep tuning in. And I hope that you take away from this that if you need alone time, if you need to avoid crowds, if you can't watch negative news or watch desperately sad movies or read fearful books, that that's okay to give yourself permission to say, I don't need to invite that energy into my life. And we hope that you keep tuning in, because what Denise and I want to bring to you each week are just stories from our lives and our clients' experiences and situations and tips and techniques that you can hopefully incorporate into your own life and experience to help you fully awaken to this wonderful energy that's shifting around us.
And to embrace that being empathic and being sensitive is truly a blessing and a positive thing in your life. And when you become more aligned with that and it becomes just who you are, not what you're trying to be, it really enhances all aspects of your life.
Yes. Well said. Well, thank you so much, Denise, for...
thank you, Samantha.
Yeah, this has been
fun.
Really, really fun. Next week, we are going to work on interviewing each other so that you guys can get to know a little bit more about who we are and how we came to be intuitives and how we came to embrace our empathy, and hope that you can get some nuggets of little tips and truth for yourself in learning about our story.
Yes. And I'm looking forward to it.
Me too. All right. Thank you so much, everybody. We hope that you have a great week, and we really hope that you tune in to our other episodes. We look forward to hearing from you. If you want to connect with us, my website is SamanthaFey.com, and Fey is spelled F-E-Y. And Denise, yours is?
TheGratefulMessenger.com.
I love that name. I tried to talk Denise into naming this show The Grateful Messenger, but it didn't really have anything to do with what we were talking about. But I love that idea that, you know, you are a grateful messenger of the information you receive and give on to your clients. So anyway, check us out if you can, and please tune into our podcast next week when we will learn more about our journeys.
Yes. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.